Hi, you're listening to the Self-Hostcast, a podcast dedicated to all things self-hosted. Today, I'm joined by Pallas Skoutsen, the founder of Home Assistant and president of the Open Home Foundation. Thanks for listening. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to the Self-Hostcast. I'm joined today by Pallas Skoutsen, the founder of Home Assistant, Nabu Casa, and the Open Home Foundation. Pallas, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, well, nice to have me.
So first off, I know we were talking about this a little beforehand. I'm so sorry. I know I butchered your last name. I spent a lot of time trying to make sure I knew how to pronounce it, and I think I still probably mess it up. So sorry again in advance.
No worries.
Yeah, but I was hoping you could just introduce yourself a little bit. I don't think, when I think about the people who are probably listening to this podcast, Home Assistant probably doesn't really need an introduction. It's easily one of the largest projects in the self-hosted space. Everyone has dipped their toes in it at least some point, or at least I have to think. But you've been very busy, and I know that the entities that are involved with Home Assistant and everything you do has grown much larger than Home Assistant. So you mind maybe just talking a little bit about your background with Home Assistant and then talking through these what you've been doing the past year?
Yeah, definitely. It has kind of grown a lot. Making open source is hard. Like, let me just start with that.
Yeah.
We always think of, you know, open source as like, oh, there's just a group of people together online. They write code. It's like, no, it's like it has to be organized and guided. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah, my name is Pallas Skoutsen. And the G is always a bit difficult to pronounce.
I was close.
Yes, yeah, definitely. Founder of Home Assistant. Next year, Home Assistant will be 11 years old. So it's been a while that I've been doing this. It started out as just a small little project, right? You know, I want to control my lights. Then I had control of my lights. I had the Philips Hue lights. I had a local API. Then, you know, oh, maybe it's cool when the sun is setting, my lights are being turned on. Then the lights, of course, went on when I was not at home. I had to get presence detection. You know, 11 years later, here I am.
Sure.
But quite some things happened over the years. And like you already mentioned, the various entities, I think that, you know, we had 5 years in. So that's like 6 years ago. I was like at a pivotal moment where Home Assistant was already getting so big and active, like a lot of contributors, and I was doing this before work, after work, we were doing this in the weekend, not just me, we were already like a bunch of people. And we realized like, okay, some of us are burning out, we need to like get sustainable development, right? And so what does it mean to sustain development? It's like, well, some people need to start paying something because we want to get people full-time working on this so that they don't have to do two jobs, but one job, right? And that one job is Home Assistant, and we can make it the best ever. And at that point in time, we had already like, you know, big tech, Google, Amazon, they had started their smart home platforms. They were like 1 or 2 years old. They're younger than Home Assistant, but they were really focusing on getting all your data in the cloud. And like the way it works is like, you know, you get, this is the way they build their systems generally, is that they put all your data in the cloud. They call it a platform. They integrate with like whatever was in your house, or those had to integrate with them actually. And then the only way you could access your data is through the Amazon app, through Amazon hardware, Google app, Google hardware.
Right.
And I started to realize, well, damn, Home Assistant is actually the only big player right now that is offering something you can self-host, something where you are in control of your data and something where people can experiment. Because if you have an API, if you can access your data, Home Assistant doesn't have to be the only one that is providing cool stuff for your house. On top of that, all of a sudden, anyone can do it. And, you know, Google, Amazon, these teams, they're very focused on the US. They're very focused on West Coast, sometimes East Coast offices. But it's just certain cultures that are building apps for the whole world. And that just doesn't fit with something as personal and private as a smart home, right? You really want people across the world be able to get like, oh, I care much about energy in the Netherlands, and that has one way of getting the data and something, and then you have people focusing on that. When we started the company, we realized like we got to double down on this. We got to like be, we don't want to turn into Google. We don't want to turn into Amazon. So we decided not to take any investors and to double down on self-hosting, locally hosted, privacy, local control, and community. And so we really wanted to build it out, make sure this is the most awesome piece of software in the world. And, you know, that's been going really, really well. I think today, I mean, I think, I know, today, you know, we've been profitable from the start that we launched, like, both hardware and a subscription service that you can pay on top of Home Assistant that doesn't take anything away, anything, everything that the company Nabucasa does, you can do yourself. In fact, you look at the way people run Home Assistant, 5% runs on official hardware. That's like a Raspberry Pi. People, sorry, the non 5%, right? The other people, they run on a Raspberry Pi, they run on servers, Docker containers, virtual machines, Intel NUCs, whatever. The 5%, they run on Home Assistant Green, Home Assistant Yellow, Home Assistant Blue. Home Assistant Green is our latest hub. It's like $99 just to get started with Home Assistant. It has like, it's equivalent to a Raspberry Pi, really, but it comes in a beautiful box, power adapter, you know, plug and play, Home Assistant pre-installed. And so people just want that. They also can support the project that way. I think, you know, in our community, there's a lot of technical people. Technical people, they don't mind installing a virtual machine. You want to reach the friends, the family, you know, they need something else. So we got a hardware. On the software side, similar story, right? Like people will open ports on their router. People will use a VPN to get remote access. There are a lot of people that don't want to do this. They are scared of messing with their router settings, scared of opening too much. And so, yeah, we started Home Assistant Cloud, an end-to-end encrypted remote connection, which allows users to access their Home Assistant installation anywhere in the world without us actually even being able to see what's happening because it's fully end-to-end encrypted. And yeah, that's been really great. So today, Nabucasa has 45 people working full-time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was 45 people. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, no, it's a really big organization if you look at from just that company perspective. But if you actually look at how big the community is or how big the project is, it is tiny, right? Especially if you look at our competition, like, I don't know how many people work at Google on Google Home or on Amazon, but like...
More than 45.
I think Amazon was spending like billions a year or something, right?
Right.
And, you know, we are the second most active open source project in the world. So last year, 17,000 people have worked on Home Assistant, right? They have contributed to Home Assistant, writing code, helping fix documentation, document issues, fix bugs, whatever. And, you know, 17,000 people, we are, you know, this is not just one Python application. Home Assistant is written in Python. We have our own operating system. We have... The operating system allows people to not have to worry about Linux system administration. They just have an update button in the UI. Well, now we're maintaining an operating system. We have an iOS app. We have an Android app. We're doing user research. We have a product and design team. We have a communications team. We have to talk to all these companies that we're integrating with. Some don't know yet, right? Somebody got to tell them. And yeah, so that we are 45 people. I think there's enough work for 100, at least, I would say. But, you know, we're growing, like, organically. There are no investors involved, no loans, no debts, or anything, right? Like, we only, as the community grows, as more people use Home Assistant, more people want to support the development of Home Assistant by subscribing to Home Assistant Cloud, we're growing, and, you know, it's going well. And then last year, we turned 10, so Home Assistant turned 10, Nabucasa turned 5. And, you know, we have this amazing independent platform. The Verge named this among the big 5. So you have Apple, Google, Amazon, Samsung, and Home Assistant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's awesome. And like, there's a lot of people use it. We have like 1 million active installations worldwide estimated. But I realized that, you know, there's still like an Achilles heel. And that is that, like, I started Home Assistant. Home Assistant itself has no entity. So in theory, I could sell Home Assistant. Right, like I could, you know, ruin it. I could take investors for Home Assistant, even though Nabucasa exists, but Nabucasa doesn't own a Home Assistant. And so I realized that I need to do something about it. So we created a foundation, the Open Home Foundation, and I donated Home Assistant to it. So that way, the Open Home Foundation, which is based in Switzerland, is now in control of Home Assistant. It can no longer be sold because it's a foundation bound by Swiss law. Swiss is very strict laws. So the mission of the foundation is really to focus on a smart home built around privacy, choice, and sustainability. And in Swiss law, like, a mission can only be made more narrow. It can never be made more broad. So yeah, Home Assistant is there in good hands. I'm currently the president of the Open Home Foundation, but I have no ultimate power over Home Assistant anymore. That's in the foundation's hand. And so obviously Nabucasa still exists. That's the official commercial partner of the foundation, but it really allows the ecosystem to guarantee that it will exist, right? Not only today, but also in 20 years, 100 years. And I think, you know, for me personally, like a big driver was that I see a lot of like technology. Obviously, I live and breathe technology. And there's just many places where you can only pick between big tech. There is always, pick a laptop, it's Windows or Mac. There's right. A little bit of Linux. Pick a phone, it's Google or Apple. And it's like, sometimes there's a small sliver of like, you can use a Linux phone, but the battery is bad. The Linux laptops are finally getting there, I feel, with the framework, for example.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's very rare that there's a consumer-focused, acceptable version of an independent, user-focused platform, right? And I see, you know, Firefox, for example, is a great example. Signal is a great example of places where they have broken into the consumer mind space in a way, right? Where people will talk about it, install it because they want to care about independence and privacy. And for the home, there needs to be a platform as well. Privacy is so important, especially at home. I mean, if you don't have privacy at home, if you feel like you cannot, I don't know, watch something or read something because you're going to see ads for the next 2 months on your phone about that thing, then you cannot be yourself. And that's just so important. That's why it was just the right thing to do. And Home Assistant had to go to this foundation. So that's what I started this year. This was last April, the Open Home Foundation. And yeah, there you have it. This is all the entities that we're currently playing with. And it's the reception has been really good. Like, we started the foundation and it was, in a way, we start to realize that there's all these players now that are, for example, acknowledging us more, right? Or taking us more seriously. So now we're actually talking with some bigger players that care about privacy, that they want to donate to the Open Home Foundation because they want to support our work. This was previously not possible. And so now these are like bigger donations and we can do more ambitious projects, even, you know, more ambitious than controlling the whole smart home from local. I think I have some more plans to make that even better. And yeah, hopefully we now really have a platform, a solid foundation to build upon.
Yeah, that's great. Paulus, I think you hit like 90% of the topics I wanted to talk about today in what we just talked about. So I'm just going to take a few steps back. I have a couple of questions for you. That was all great. Thank you. I want to touch a little bit on the entities and I want to go back because I want to make sure I understand. I thought coming to this conversation, I understood the dynamic between everything. But now I'm not so sure, and maybe I'll sound like an idiot. I'm not sure. But so Home Assistant is an open source project that you started back in 2013, garnered interest, other people started contributing. And then 4 or 5 years later, you and a couple people sit down and you say, hey, this has taken a lot of effort. We need more resources to really grow this into something that's a little more robust and mature.
Yeah,
and so that's where Nabucasa comes from. And essentially what you're doing is you're monetizing through cloud subscriptions by giving people cloud and remote access that might not have the skills or desire to manage that themselves. You also have the hardware aspect of it. So from that perspective, am I right so far that Nabucasa provides that, and in doing that, you and other developers are being compensated and therefore can devote more time to the actual development of Home Assistant. Am I following that correctly so far?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So where I was a little confused is when the Open Home Foundation, I think, is an awesome initiative. And I want to talk about that a little more because I think it's something probably the rest of the open source community can learn from, at least when it comes to giving users a little more peace of mind. But when you talked about you gave Home Assistant to the Open Home Foundation, how does that work? So I think like, okay, Home Assistant is an open source public project.
Yeah.
No one really owns it in the sense that you have a collective group of people who are contributing. Anyone at any time could fork it and make it their own. But the Open Home Foundation essentially owns the future trajectory of Home Assistant.
So the key is always governance, right? Like, we, sure, the source code is public. Anyone can take the source code, but most forks actually fail, right? You need to have like the group of people that are leading it. They can take it somewhere. And for example, if I am the sole person, I started Home Assistant, I, in the end, was in charge saying, I will accept this contribution, I will not accept this contribution. And so you can say, okay, I'm only going to accept stuff that works towards privacy. I'm not going to accept anything that is something else. In an open source project, it's all public, of course. But in the end, the person that starts the project, unless otherwise any other governance adopted, they are in charge of, hey, what is the direction of the project? Which contributions are we accepting? Because open source is not like Wikipedia, right? Wikipedia, you can go to Wikipedia today and you can edit a page. And if Wikipedia doesn't like it, they have to find that edit and actually undo it. In open source, I have to accept your edit before it gets like published to everybody, right? That means that in the end, whoever leads Home Assistant, they are in control of the direction Home Assistant is going. And if the person leading Home Assistant is going to be, for example, there's this investor model around open source called Open Core. Mm-hmm. And for example, Node-RED, which is a very popular automation engine that people use with Home Assistant, they have turned themselves into an open core PC-funded company. What that means is that the core of the open source project is free and anyone can use it, anyone can contribute, but they will also have enterprise modules around it that people that pay for the enterprise software, they can use that. And they, you know, that's how they pay for support and for building out the whole open source project as well. The problem with that system is, A, you start to have the core, which was supposed to be maybe also for enterprise. If somebody wants to contribute something that competes with the paid features, right, you see that conflict of interest happening like all the time in these kind of models. And it ends usually in drama that like somebody forks the open source version, maybe that succeeds.
Right.
Or something like Terraform, right? Like Terraform had something similar and now there's OpenTofu and, you know, hopefully there's enough manpower behind it to push it forward. But more often than not, these forks, they fizzle out or something like this. So
yeah,
there is a lot of control by the person who leads an open source project. And that control that who leads Home Assistant, that is now the Open Home Foundation.
Okay, so you still have a lot of insight and input into its direction because of your role in the Open Home Foundation,
yeah,
where you're the president of the foundation. But essentially what you've done is you've removed your specific role as a part of the open source project, where you're saying, this was mine to start.
Yeah.
The direction's mine. I'll accept or not accept. So theoretically, one day you might step down from the foundation and then you don't have that say anymore. That where a normal open source project might have that, you've taken that ability away.
Yeah. And I think that even today, as president of the Open Home Foundation, I have to follow the mission of the Open Home Foundation. I cannot go against that mission. And so that means that already today, and that mission is based on actually, of course, how I've run the project for the last 11 years, or like from before, actually the last 10 and a half before it became a foundation. So privacy, choice, sustainability, and those values are now ingrained, and we are going to make sure that Home Assistant will forever be that way, right? So for example, we will never be able to take something that runs locally in your house and paywall it, that you would only get access to that code if you pay for a subscription or something. That is just not possible. Most of that code actually runs inside Home Assistant, such that people that are doing a manual setup of Google, they actually use the same logic as the Nabucasa subscriber, such that we only have one code base that we're fixing, so that like whoever fixes it, fixes for everyone.
Yep. So I want to stay here a little bit because I think it's really important, and I want people who are listening to this to really understand how you've set up Home Assistant for the future. And I think Home Assistant is a really cool project to spearhead a movement like this, because one, it's popular, but two, going back to you stress privacy a lot. I survey readers a lot, and usually the top reason people self-host is because of privacy and wanting to keep things private. And so it's not a surprise that something like smart home and home automation is where people are drawn to, you know, in a world where we're constantly trying to figure out our entities listening to us through our phone microphones. And, you know, we have the cameras at our house, and do we care if someone might be watching them or someone might not be watching them? So it's really important. And I just love what you've done with the Open Home Foundation, especially in light of news of some of the stuff other larger projects in the self-hosted space have gone through. I think Image is one that comes up all the time now. They were the project team acquired by Fudo, and there was a lot of concern as to what does this mean about Image now that maybe they have a little more incentive to try and find some way to monetize. I personally think they have good intentions, and I don't doubt that great things aren't going to come from it. But something like the Open Home Foundation does give me a little more peace that, hey, there is something bigger and broader than just a bunch of, you know, random people working on this third time. That gives me peace of mind that, yes, Home Assistant is going to be a staying power. It's going to have my best interests in mind, and I don't really have to worry about that. But with that being said, how does the dynamic and relationship with the Open Home Foundation work in making sure, or how does the community make sure that the foundation continues to have their best interests in mind, and that, you know, one day the foundation isn't comprised of a bunch of people who might not value those core things anymore?
Well, the main thing is, of course, the mission we set for the foundation. And like I said, in Swiss law, the foundation's mission can only be made more narrow. Now, of course, there's no, you know, privacy, choice, and sustainability can also mean like, well, super sustainable if we all, I don't know, use some ecological, grow our own trees that we turn into smart home. Maybe something like this could happen, I guess. I mean, this is where succession is still very important when it comes to that. But it's all about, like, for now, all the people have to still operate within those parameters that I've set for it in the foundation, which is going to be at least very good guardrails. I think in the end, any foundation can still be, you know, ruined, either because they, you know, mess up the money situation such that the development is not sustainable, or maybe they, you know, we do a monthly release, maybe they'll move like once every 2 years or something like this. Yeah, there's a lot of ways it could be ruined still, but I think we have made sure that like 99% of the options that usually ruin things, they are not able to ruin Home Assistant.
Yep. Yeah. And I was not trying to imply that was going to happen one day. There's just kind of like the cog spinning in the back of my mind. I'm also curious. One of the things I remember happening, I don't know how recent, maybe in the last several months, Home Assistant has a really cool program called Works with Home Assistant, where you partner with all the smart home device makers to make sure things are compatible and people can integrate it with Home Assistant, which is really cool. And I constantly follow it because I love seeing smart home devices that I have popping up on that. But I remember seeing an announcement that Works with Home Assistant also has joined the Open Home Foundation. And I guess I don't understand enough about what type of entity Works with Home Assistant is, that it's the type of thing that can transfer over to something like the foundation.
Well, so before we had the Open Home Foundation, there was no entity for Home Assistant. So programs like Works with Home Assistant, they were fully run from Nabucasa, because that was the entity that was doing the development. So Works with Home Assistant would require testing and validation, for example, of that devices work correctly. And, you know, Nabucasa employees would do that. Now, it's kind of weird if Nabucasa, they've never owned Home Assistant, but now there's a clear owner of Home Assistant, right? So there's that. We're trying to do all the non-commercial activity all under the Open Home Foundation. And so actually, to take a step back, the goal of the Works with Home Assistant program is that we want to have a stamp of approval on a device that we think will work in your house for at least 10 years. And basically, we think that's important because if we look at your upgrade cycles, right, maybe your phone every 3 years, your laptop every 5 years, it's a lot of waste that is being generated. And you know, if you have a house and you have like 20 light bulbs and, you know, two thermostats, whatever, you can expect people to just throw that out all the time. And in fact, like back in the days, that stuff kept running for like 20, 30 years. And so we want to get back to that for the smart home, right? And so we look at mainly how is a device structured to be smart. So if it's using an open standard, Zigbee, Z-Wave, Matter, then we know, okay, even if this company goes out of business in 10 years, you could still add this to your smart home, right? Because sometimes you hear like the VanMoof bikes, right? They went like bankrupt last year. People couldn't unlock their bikes because the servers went down, right? Now they made like an extra start or whatever. But for a while, the people were like, okay, I cannot like unlock my bike. That's an issue, right? And so that's a cloud-connected bike, which is crazy if you tell somebody 20 years ago. But this happens all the time in our smart home. And there's just, oh, your speaker is connected. Your TV is connected. There's just, the internet is down. Your TV doesn't start up or whatever. There's all these like weird things are possible nowadays that used to not be the case. And so with the Works with Home Assistant, we want to have this stamp that we can say, okay, you can have peace of mind buying this product and it should keep working. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that the rest of the product is the best. Like, does it have the best like color reproduction index of a light bulb? No, there's like many light bulbs that will join the Works with Home Assistant program. We just make sure that if it is in our program, you know it will stay working for as part of your smart home.
Right. Right. So is Works with Home Assistant like essentially a trademark that the Open Home Foundation owns now, and now they'll be responsible for going out and
yeah, it's a certification program, right? So it's really, yeah, we work with companies. They need to, we have a pretty strict contract that they have to sign. They have to also honor our values, privacy, choice, sustainability. They need to offer providers with test devices. Not only do we verify that they actually work today with Home Assistant, even if they have Z-Wave or Zigbee certification, we still will find issues sometimes where things don't work. They need to offer updates. So we have a Z-Wave device update service, a Zigbee update service. Matter has a built-in update service into the standard. They need to participate in those to join the program. We need to have an engineering contact such that as our users discover bugs, we need to be able to talk to this company and get them to fix their stuff as well. So there's really, it's not easy to join our program, but you know, it's that mark of like prestigious mark, right? We want it to be really like, okay, this is a good device. And when we tell that to our community and they're looking for their next product, I hope that they look at our Works with Home Assistant approved devices first and buy from that selection, because then they know, oh, okay, this is good.
Yeah, I love it for multiple reasons. One, for what you're saying, because I know if I buy a device, I'm not going to have any issues, or shouldn't have many, if any, issues integrated into Home Assistant. But I also love the credibility it brings Home Assistant, right? Because now you're on at least online store listings, if not on the actual product packaging, along with Works with Alexa, Works with Google Home, or whatever they have now. So I have to imagine that's been great for Home Assistant from that perspective, almost just from like a marketing perspective.
Yes. No, I mean, that definitely also helps. Although what I believe is that, like, you know, right now, you know, nobody discovers Home Assistant on a store shelf. Nobody goes like to Amazon and types in the Home Assistant. Right now you discover Home Assistant because maybe you're part of the self-hosted community, or maybe your favorite YouTuber is using Home Assistant for some cool project and you want to copy that as well. We don't have a lot of like people whose first smart home is Home Assistant. I think our biggest by far inflow of users is what we call the outgrowers. So these are people, they get a few devices that are smart. They realize that they have different apps, often driven by voice. Google or Apple, they're like, oh, I want everything under Google Home, Apple Home, Amazon, maybe sometimes Samsung. And then they start running into limitations. Like, privacy is, of course, a big one, but history, device compatibility, automation options. Maybe you want to experiment with nice dashboards, and that's not possible on those systems. They start looking online, and the answer is always Home Assistant, right? Like, this is just the foundation of your smart home. And even if you don't use Home Assistant for everything, like, for example, I mentioned Node-RED, very popular to automate your house, but then Node-RED integrated with Home Assistant, right? And there are a bunch of other very popular automation engines that also just run on Home Assistant, let Home Assistant take care of bringing everything together. We are not a closed data silo. We are very open. We have open APIs. People can even access the database. You get real-time access to the data as the system sees it. And so it's a very good platform for other open source projects to build upon, for example.
Sure. So I think this is probably a good pivoting point. I think you touched on this a little bit. Home Assistant is doing great things, and it has a great reputation in the self-hosted community, but clearly there is a desire for it to grow. You know, there are a lot of non-technical people using things like Alexa and Google Home and all those smart home consolidation type services. And I know that's where Nabucasa and Home Assistant Open Home Foundation want to be. But when I sit and think about this, there are a couple barriers of entry, I guess I would call them. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on them. And I know that your team has been working on, and it's just hardware and the ability to install and run and own Home Assistant and feel like you have the full privacy of your hardware. And so Nabucasa has released some hardware, yellow, green, to make things a little easier. I think that's been great. But I wonder how much of that is still a little daunting for people to buy and install and maintain versus, you know, something like their Alexa speakers or their Google Home Hub, that you kind of get the functionality behind the scenes while you're also getting the benefits of that product, versus you have this little tiny box that's essentially a small server now sitting somewhere that does nothing other than work in the background to connect things. And then the second thing I was thinking of is just like the analysis paralysis with protocols. So you've got Zigbee, you've got Z-Wave, there's Thread, there's Matter. And I know, it feels like every couple of years, we kind of follow the trajectory of that XKCD comic, that very famous one where it's like, hey, there are all these standards and protocols. Let's create one that's going to consolidate and bring all of them together. And then that just ends up being its own thing. And then more comes from that. And I feel like that keeps happening to some extent. And I'm like, I was joking about it on social media a couple months ago. Like, I'm chasing the infinity gauntlet of all the smart home protocols. I had just done Z-Wave. And I'm like, what else do I need to complete, you know, that gauntlet? But any thoughts on any of that?
Well, I think the first thing is that the insinuation that Google Home or Apple Home is easy is that I disagree. Like, I think
that's fair.
The space itself is just very complicated. Even for those players that are really focused on simplicity, like, it's just still very difficult. Like, open the Google Home settings and there's just like five tabs with like, and people don't know the difference between Google Assistant and Google Home, and like, you know, what is your link all your media services, and like it's very complicated even for them, and they don't even have like nice ways to organize your dashboards, right? You can organize by areas to make your own. In Apple Home, you can make your own pages basically, but you cannot decide how things look. And so it's hard, and as things break, you have no idea, right? Because in Home Assistant, you can look if you know how to look for things, of course. You can get to the data. With an Apple Home, you just don't get any logs, right? You're just stuck. And if it doesn't work, you can turn the light on and off, and maybe that will, you know, revive that piece of equipment, but like otherwise you don't know. So all of this is very hard, and this is where Matter actually comes in. With Matter, they have really, you know, I know you just talked about the XKCD, but I actually think that with Matter, it's going to be the one that will definitely survive. The others will also survive, but I think that the reason why Matter is going to win is because they've learned a lot from the older protocols. Matter is the only smart home protocol that works over Wi-Fi, or over Ethernet. So the other ones all require their own radio stack. So basically the way you have to think of it is that Zigbee has the Zigbee radio and has the Zigbee protocol application layer, Z-Wave the same thing. With Matter, they have decoupled it. So Matter will go over Wi-Fi, Ethernet, or Thread. So Thread itself is not smart home specific. The way, think of Thread as like a very slow Wi-Fi. That's really how you have to think of it. It's just very slow Wi-Fi that supports battery operated devices. But it doesn't have to be smart home. It doesn't have to be Matter. HomeKit was over Thread as well. Nanoleaf, which makes a Canadian company making light bulbs, they have their own protocol that runs over Thread, because just like Wi-Fi, right, we're having this call over Wi-Fi, but like I can also browse the web over Wi-Fi, that is just agnostic of what goes over it. And so that is where I think that's one of the things that makes Matter pretty, it's going to be successful, combined with the fact that, you know, when Google and Apple put their power behind something and it's on your phone by default, it's very hard to like go around it, right? Like if you are a manufacturer of light bulbs, like, how do I get the biggest amount of people being able to use my product? Matter is the answer there, because it will work with every Android and iPhone in the world. That's every phone, more or less. There are other things in Matter also. The other thing that I really like is the multi-fabric. Multi-fabric means that a single device can be paired to 5 smart home systems. So if you use Apple or you use Google and you want to try out Home Assistant, you can just share those devices, and now Home Assistant can control them. Eventually, of course, you fully move over to Home Assistant. You don't need Google and Apple anymore. You can actually just kick them out, and so they don't have access to the data anymore, but you can slowly transition as you see fit. So will this help Home Assistant get into the mainstream? We're working on it, right? I think we are. It's difficult. Home Assistant is difficult. I mean, I started as a Python project with a text file for configuration. That was just a Python application. Then we built our operating system, which really allowed people to just hit update in the UI. You know, there's like 2 partitions on the operating system. If an update fails, we can roll back. If the host will update the Docker container that runs Home Assistant, if that update fails, we automatically roll back. So it's a very robust system. So that part, I feel like we have solved.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger challenge is just that every house is different. The amount of devices we see, the amount of devices we can control or connect to. Sometimes there's you need like a developer key, or you have to enable an API to get access, because some devices are smart, but they are not open, right? And so we find ways to control them, but it will require some more tinkering, of course, which is also, it's cool that Home Assistant can do it. For the mainstream, it wouldn't be the solution, right? Like I can't expect a random person to discover a Home Assistant at Best Buy, buy the Home Assistant Green, bring it home and be like, oh, now I'm going to Spotify developer account. As good as we want it to be, that's not possible, right? So then really what I would hope is that people that start with Home Assistant, they'd be like, oh, here's a collection of works with Home Assistant devices. I know this stuff all works for my house, and this is kind of devices I can build a smart home with that will work great with Home Assistant. And that's why we're building out works with Home Assistant, put a lot of effort in, but we have an amazing product and design team. They're doing user research. We talk to our users. We all live in homes with multiple people, right? And if we don't give the people that administer Home Assistant the right tools to make it so that everybody else also appreciates Home Assistant, then we're not doing a good job, right? Because otherwise, it's just like, that doesn't have a high home approval factor. We're going to like kick it out of the house. We'll go back to the light switches or something, right? Or something, whatever.
I stand corrected on some of the things I said. I often, and not that I forget about Home Assistant OS, but I'm just one of those people who's a glutton for punishment, and I run Home Assistant and all the add-ons through Docker containers. And so I forget how streamlined it is when you use Home Assistant OS. And my situation is just a product of like, I needed something very basic. So I spun up a Home Assistant container one day. And then I wanted Frigate for my cameras, but my Home Assistant hardware couldn't support it. So I had to spin it up on something else. And now I've got like 3 different devices with containers that all come together, which works for me, but there is some complexity in it that is fine for me. And I always think, wow, how would someone else use it? But to your point, they would be using Home Assistant OS where you don't have the complexity of something like.
We see 75% of the people use Home Assistant OS. And it's like it's slowly growing. And the next thing is Home Assistant Core. Well, not container, sorry, container. So when I say Home Assistant OS, actually that also, I think, and there's like a small group of people use Supervised, which is you get all the benefits from Home Assistant OS, but you have to maintain your own operating system, which some people want to do that because they can repurpose a device for other things. But then maintaining your own operating system seems like, oh, it works today, but that's installation is not the same as maintenance, right? So in a year or two, when the requirements change, then all of a sudden it becomes tricky. But luckily, we have amazing backup feature. So sometimes maintenance is just installation, storing the backup.
This is the kind of stuff you also don't want going down. There's just too many people, and myself included, who my family will get very frustrated and aggravated with me if light switches and things aren't working. And I know that's like the most common thing people kind of joke about within the home assistant space.
I want to just like one circle back, because like you mentioned that you run everything by containers. One of the benefits of Home Assistant OS is that some things are add-ons that, because they run different applications, like the Z-Wave driver that we have is called Z-Wave.js. It's a JavaScript application, but we are a Python application. So Z-Wave.js server runs in a separate add-on. Now, if you plug a USB stick into your Home Assistant Green or any Home Assistant OS-based device like a Raspberry Pi, Intel NUC, Z-Wave.js will just pop up in Home Assistant and say, hey, we see a Z-Wave stick, click here. And then it will automatically install the add-on, configure the add-on, use your USB stick, spin up the Z-Wave integration. It's just like a user doesn't even know they're installing an add-on, right? It's just one big, like just one flow, right? They just see the same spinner. Both Matter and Z-Wave are based on these kind of add-ons. And so if you don't use Home Assistant OS, yeah, you got to do more work, right? Because now you also have to update. How do you know perfectly if your Home Assistant version matches the latest Z-Wave.js container? Now you have to monitor the logs if it goes off. If your container launches, can Home Assistant reconnect? And it's just a lot of work that we built Home Assistant OS to take away all the maintenance, right? To do a lot of this work for you. And I would definitely advise anyone that is running Home Assistant container to evaluate. Maybe you can run Home Assistant in a virtual machine on a bigger server, for example. And even if you run Home Assistant OS, you can still, Frigate probably still wouldn't run on your device, right? Like Frigate, an NVR open source, there's a lot of video processing that needs a bigger server. You can still run Frigate on a different computer and have Home Assistant on the separate computer. That still works together, even with Home Assistant OS.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm certainly not advocating for what I'm going to do. And actually, the timing of this is kind of funny. I think by the time I publish this recording, I will have actually shifted. I have a machine on the way. It was a couple of weeks ago. I'm like, I'm so tired of, like, I have my primary web server. I have so many containers that are really just dedicated to Home Assistant, all the add-on. And I'm like, I want to consolidate that. I'm tired of seeing them everywhere. And so I actually bought a machine. It's on the way now. Nice. My weekend project this weekend to consolidate. I'm going to try and bring Frigate in as well. I have like a Coral USB, so hopefully that can
help
some of the load off of some of the resources.
Yeah, no, the Coral will make Frigate fly. It's amazing. Like that, the image recognition is just like, yeah, hundreds of frames per second you can do.
Yeah. It's funny, as I watch I'm staying very close to all the Home Assistant announcements. One, because anytime I publish a weekly newsletter, what's going on in self-hosted world. And anytime I don't find a lot going on, I know I can always count on something with Home Assistant that's worth sharing. And so I follow it closely, and I've been very in tune with what's going on with voice and with AI. And I know and I'm not there yet, and I'm still getting there. I see you're holding that up. I'm just still trying to get like my facial recognition to work with Frigate so I know who's at my front doorbell. I'm not quite sure I'm ready for the AI voice stuff, but I've listened to enough podcasts of people talking about like recording their voices so they can be their assistant. And that's very intriguing to me. So maybe that'll be my next project.
Well, talking about voice, I mean, I just showed you on the camera. Listeners cannot see it, but I was showing you, this is a prototype of the hardware. We've been building a voice assistant for the last like 1.5 years, right? Like last year was Year of the Voice, where we really set out to build the infrastructure to allow anyone to control their house in their own language. Now, what we didn't plan on, but it kind of came up simultaneously, was AI, right? And all of a sudden, large language models can also be plugged in. And all of a sudden, they actually, you know, we had this whole sentence matching system that works super fast, works local on a Raspberry Pi. And all of a sudden, LLM comes and it can do basically the same things, if not better, without any pre-training. Like literally just trained on like whatever is on the internet, and we gave it API access to like LLM. So it's a feature in Home Assistant. And you talk to Gemini 1.5 Flash, which is like a relatively pretty cheap model. It's 7 cents per million tokens, which means you pay like less than a cent per voice request, which I mean, still sounds like a lot in like the grand scheme of things, as in like, well, you're paying that much, but
right.
For AI, it's cheap. and it just controls your house. And like, it does crazy magical things. Like, I told it, I'm coming out of the shower, get my room ready. And it closed my blinds and it turned on my lights because it had derived like, oh, you need to change your outfit or you need to, and like, that's just smart. That's just like, we didn't train it. We didn't, I didn't give it any, I didn't even tell it which room is mine. It, I guess it just assumed like, oh, you're the person talking. You're like in the primary bedroom and these kind of things. And so it's really awesome. But even if you just, if you don't care about AI, which I understand there's a, AI can be, it's everywhere nowadays. Our voice stack, speech to text, sentence matching, text to speech runs without AI, right? Like we have a, a neural network optimized to generate voices on a Raspberry Pi called Piper. It was our own text to speech engine that we built, also part of the Open Home Foundation. And that allows us to do local text to speech. For speech to text, we rely on Whisper, for example. Whisper is, it works best for English, non-accent English, right? So US, UK, like if a Dutch person like me speaking English, it's definitely not performing as well as a native speaker. But it's actually possible to do fully local voice. And it's the only thing really in standing in its way is hardware. So there's the Atom Echo, there's an S3 box. These are like devices from M5 Stack and Espressif that are capable of doing voice and that we have used as a platform for people to use, but their speakers suck. So really like you, it will pick up your voice. It has a microphone. It will do the command, but you cannot hear the response. And especially with sentence matching, you need to be more exact, right? There's no room for bad interpretation because the sentence wouldn't match. And combine it with like a whisper that doesn't always get my English, right? You really want to hear the response if it's been successful, and with a bad speaker, that's just not possible. And so we're building hardware that will be able for people to use the Home Assistant Voice Assistant at home, probably launching later this year. November is kind of target release, but we'll have a great speaker. We have like an Exynos chip to do like noise filtering, echo cancelling microphones, audio out, so that like, you know, Music Assistant, which is also, it's a collaboration partner of the Open Home Foundation and also maintained by somebody that actually works with Nabucasa. The best way to stream music across your house, integrated with Home Assistant, that will just work great also with our new voice hardware, because the audio out will make sure that like you stream your music to this box, which goes into your speakers. And then if you say the wake word, it will lower the volume, speak your command, all that stuff you kind of expect from Google and Amazon will work with this box. So it's going to be super cool. I think November, December will be a great time to try out voice.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can you speak a little to the prototype you held up? I know listeners can't really see it, obviously, but...
Yeah, so it's... I don't want to explain too much of how it looks because that's still kind of a... We haven't really shown that to the public. But yeah, like I said, it has the microphone chip for the filtering. You're able to control the volume. It has a button. So if you don't want to use wake words, you can actually use a button to do to do push to talk, which is something that we hear from our community. Like sometimes wake words have false positives. That means that audio is being recorded, which I don't want to. So, okay, well then let's make sure you can turn your wake word off and just use push to talk. And yeah, it's a neat little device. It's like around 8 by 8 centimeters. So it's a little, you know, square you would put somewhere in your house. Hopefully it kind of fades away in the among your books or something. And then you should be able, anywhere in the room, be able to speak the wake word and then control your house.
Yeah, it looks really slick. It would definitely have the wife approval factor in my house, I think. But really quickly, going back to AI... I feel like I've embraced AI. I use it for a lot of things. It's daunting to me from a self-hosting perspective, mostly because I know early on it was like, hey, if you want to run this model, you need like 132 gigabytes of RAM and you need all this. And you're showing, I see you're holding up more hardware for me. But I feel like the last 4 years I've lost all like concept of time and the events that are relative, but it feels like kind of like the AI boom did come hand in hand last year with your year of The Voice. And I feel like that's there was a little bit of luck for you in there. And I know you say you don't need AI for voice. You have stuff that does it fully, but I have to believe there are a ton of benefits, and you kind of outlined some of them that come along with AI. So at some point, have you guys just sat back and been like, wow, you know, what good timing this has been for you know, these things to kind of happen at the same time?
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. I think without the AI boom, for example, OpenAI wouldn't have released Whisper, because they needed more text to feed into their GPT, ChatGPT. And so they created Whisper to just turn any audio or video they find online in text that they can feed into the large language model. And then they decided to release that model online. And that's actually now what we are using for self-hosting speech to text. And so, yeah, no, we've been just extremely lucky that also, I don't know, it's for text-to-speech, there's like, you know, a lot of voice cloning happening right now. Mainly is being abused, right? Like for celebrities and stuff.
Right.
But it has caused a big boom in seeing a lot of text-to-speech development happen as well. So we are able to benefit from those innovations as well for the local home. And then I was just holding up a device. This is it's a Jetson AGX Orin. This is a $2,000 device to run large language models at home.
Oh, wow.
And so this is, we've been working with NVIDIA. NVIDIA, of course, really likes locally hosted large language models because that means they can sell more chips. And so we've worked with them, and they've been working with like making sure the local models work great with Home Assistant, getting like tool calling going. So we are through Olama, we integrate, for example, you can integrate any local model nowadays, but the Llama 3.1 is the current winner. If you want to like control Home Assistant, we have a whole benchmark suite. And so, yeah, this box, it has 64 gigabytes of like shared GPU, CPU memory. And so it can run models very fast, which if you have to wait 5-6 seconds for a response, you might as well just press that like button or whatever, right? The things that you're going for. With this box, it's flying. But I think, A, it's not really accessible for a lot of people. Like $2,000, like for anything is really too much that you don't use. Like it has to be running nonstop for $2,000, right? But I think also the electricity usage of these boxes are pretty intense, right? Like they use a lot of electricity, and unless you have a lot of solar or you know that like tea is coming from like green sources, it's probably more energy efficient to get it, you know, somewhere where there's a data center that has shared GPUs with other people and you're able to benefit. But that's, in the end, I feel like this is the beauty of Home Assistant. You have your choice, right? Do you care more about self-hosting, running everything at home, local, is energy less important, or is a cloud reliance, you know, something you're willing to accept but save on energy?
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm very curious now to see what other hardware you have hidden right beneath your camera that you keep flashing in front of me.
No, I mean, I'll actually show you one. This is actually, it's funny, this is not even a smart home thing. I just bought it the other day. It's called a Kilowatt Flex. It's the wire cutter's recommended device. It's a power plug with energy monitoring, but it has a display so you see real time the energy.
Oh.
Because I've been going through my house, so I have the energy dashboard set up in Home Assistant. I can see my energy. I have some Shelly energy meter clamps on my power cable, so I know all the energy going into my house. I don't have solar, so nothing is going back to the grid, sadly. But I don't know what is using all my energy. So I'm using this device because I can see on the screen right away what is using it. So, you know, it's still my desk. I haven't used it yet, I have to admit. But I heard that my brother printer that I have on always apparently keeps the thing warm, so it can always print, but that actually takes up a lot of energy. So that's something I want to measure. I want to put this thing at my, I self-host as well. I have a server running, but I think my server right now is like 10 years old or something. I think it's probably really bad. So I need to see how bad it is and if I'm willing to spend the time to like reinstall stuff, because that's always that. Everything is in Docker containers, of course, but it's like,
right,
to get there is like, you know, spend a weekend, I guess.
Yeah. So this is a good pivoting point. So we're coming up on an hour. I want to spend 5 or 10 minutes talking a little bit about what else you self-host and what your Helm Lab looks like. But before we jump into that, can you talk a little bit about, for those who are listening and want to get involved with Home Assistant, how can people contribute, whether it's to Home Assistant or to the Open Home Foundation? What opportunities are there to volunteer, to help further the cause, for people who might be technical and might be able to lend some development skills, or for people who don't and just love the concept of self-hosting and can do at least the basic?
I would say the best thing is to use Home Assistant, right? So be able to use Home Assistant, help friends and family that are interested in these kind of things, help them with Home Assistant, then start seeing the kind of things that they're struggling with, or maybe there's work. Make sure you check their logs. If there's stack traces, report them to GitHub. That is like super helpful, because we don't automatically upload your errors to Home Assistant, because there's just a lot of errors happening. And we thought about an opt-in setting, but it's just like the amount of data I like to pay for that is just too much. And so share the logs, help us make these integrations better. Every subsystem that's supported by Home Assistant generally has 1, 2, sometimes 3 maintainers that focus on just that little piece. Like, there's a person responsible for Philips Hue, there's a person or two responsible for HomeKit. There's every section has like their own maintainers, and they monitor the GitHub issues. They will be automatically managed. Bug reports come in. Of course, you know, we love people subscribing to Home Assistant Cloud that directly pays our salaries to work on Home Assistant. And if you can program, I mean, please help, right? Like, there's find an integration that is not doing as well. Like, we have an integration quality skill. And so there's kind of a checklist. You can say, this needs to be done to get this to the next level. And our integration quality skill is robustness, error recovery, user experience, right? There's different levels integrations can grow. And there's just, you know, if you look at our analytics, which are opt-in, but they still give a good picture of what's happening in the Home Assistant community, what's being used, you sometimes see that like something is quite popular, but actually the code quality could benefit from, you know, some help. So there's definitely that. But you know, if you look at the Open Home Foundation, there's Home Assistant is of course our major user-facing project, but we actually have another one, which is called ESP Home. So ESP Home allows people to create their own devices that, of course, run fully local, privacy focused, and ESP Home is also open source, and it allows people, anyone really, to just write a configuration file, have a microcontroller, and that microcontroller will be programmed for you with your settings. Like, for example, I have a temperature sensor connected to it. This gets into Home Assist. So yeah, if you want to help, also on the ESP Home side, there's a lot of things to be done, right? I think, you know, if you look at our whole, we have such an umbrella of like 240 different technologies, libraries, standards, protocols that we are maintaining as a whole community. And that's only to make Home Assistant. But actually, Home Assistant itself is just the base. On top of that, we have the Home Assistant Community Store, which is a community-run project where people that make their own cards and integrations that are not part of Home Assistant. And then it, on its own, is almost like a second layer of code and community that sits. Like, I mean, there are so many different ways to improve the ecosystem. So if anyone can program, definitely help. If you can program, then like help the developers. And like, you know, I've mentioned a bunch of projects throughout this hour, and Home Assistant Cloud, it supports, the money goes to Nabucasa, which the money ends up in the Open Home Foundation. The Open Home Foundation, not only do we work on Home Assistant ESP Home, but we also projects that we rely on. So Music Assistant is supported because like the maintainer works at Nabucasa. ZFJS, the founder of ZFJS, is an independent project. He also works full-time at Nabucasa. Joachim, who runs the Home Assistant Community Store, also works full-time at Nabucasa. So we are really making sure that the ecosystem we're building is well supported, because we see that all these pieces are very important for reaching our goals, right? For being able to tell people, hey, we are equivalent, if not better, than Google, Apple, or Amazon. It requires a lot of effort, and we're making it happen.
Yeah, that's great. I will try and include as
many links as I can in the show notes for anyone who wants to get interested, involved in anything. I'll include Home Assistant Cloud links if you want to help support Nabucasa from a monetization perspective. But really, it would encourage everyone to get involved in some aspect, because these projects are successful with the more people who are invested in helping it be successful. But with that being said, I'm going to put you on the spot for a few minutes here. Although I did give you a heads up before we started recording, I wanted to talk a little bit about what else you self-host other than Home Assistant. I know you've already mentioned your server. You have a 10-year-old server, which, by the way, I don't think you're in the minority of people. I think that's probably close to the average age of most servers that people have running, or at least in my experience. But any other things from your dashboard you're willing to share?
Sure, yeah. So I have, it's an Intel Core i5 for 4570S. It runs Unraid. So I have three disks in it and one parity disk. I've had now two times a disk fail, and it's always a little scary because then I'm, testing if the Unraid system really works. But that's been going well so far. I run Plex. I love Plex. Like, Plex has been, I don't remember even when I bought my lifetime Plex pass, but it's been long, long time ago. Then I have what else? I have what's called Duplicati. Duplicati creates backups and then syncs it over to. I don't even remember, but like I pay for some hosting, I get a bill, the name jumps out, but like they do that. And the other thing I have is the server. So there's like my friend helped me set it up, but my son is really into Minecraft, and you can host a Minecraft server, like the Java server, but somebody made there's two versions of Minecraft. One runs on iPads and Android, and one runs the old Java server, but you can set up a Java server that has iPad Minecraft can connect to, and then you can have a world where all his friends can connect together and play. And so, yeah, it's that one is also running on my server. But that's kind of that's about it, right? Like it's nice. And like, for example, for Plex, I'm from the Netherlands. I live in Brooklyn. There's just all this geo-locked content that that's like Dutch children's shows, for example, that I cannot access. So then I'll go on a VPN, I will download it, and then, put it on Plex, and then my children can actually just watch it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's very difficult to be abroad and actually get content in your native language. Netflix has the shows, but doesn't offer those languages in America. They only offer English and Spanish. So that's where, being able to just download that stuff, put it on Plex, they get a beautiful UI. I love it.
Oh, that's a great use case for it. What about Home Assistant? How do you run Home Assistant? And do you have like a production level? This is my serious Home Assistant. Like, my family relies on this. I'm not going to use this as a guinea pig. And then I have something else I spin up for work to test new things. Or how do you manage that?
Yeah. So I still run the Home Assistant Blue. That was our first piece of hardware that we put out. My Zigbee stick is the Home Assistant ZBT1. Which is our Home Assistant Connect CBT1, so that's our own Zigbee stick. I have two of them, one dedicated to Thread, one dedicated to Zigbee. I have the beauty of Thread, by the way, I mentioned it earlier, but Thread is like slow Wi-Fi. It actually supports multiple Thread border routers to work together. And the moment it hits a border router, after that it goes over Wi-Fi or Ethernet or whatever. My Home Assistant Hub is a Thread border router, but that's in the basement where my Home Assistant is. With my blinds, which are meta over Thread, they didn't make it all the way there. So in that case, I have a HomePod Mini up there, which is an Apple product, which has a Thread border router in it, and that will just work natively with Home Assistant. So Home Assistant talks to the HomePod Mini will speak Thread to my blinds. And so that way I'm able to control it without Apple Home involved. This is just, the Thread ecosystem that is available through Apple and Google devices. Well, and other places as well, but those are the major things. I do just run nightly, by the way. I just run I was just like a couple of, it was 2.5 months in Europe for summer, working from there. Then I turn off nightly. I'll just run stable, but when I'm at home, I want to see the latest things that we're building. I want to make sure that if things fail, like, being able to fix it. And, it's it looks always that like we have this smooth release, but before something is a smooth release, we're all testing it. We're using it. And we're like, oh, this button feel right or going to be confusing, or this, can we change this flow, tweak this icon? And so we're constantly kind of playing with it. And so it's important that, you know, I run nightly because I want to be able to see what we're going to ship and make sure it's the right thing, because everybody hates the UI that just flips around every release, right? So when we put things out, it should really work. And I, for development, like Home Assistant is such a small application. It runs on a Raspberry Pi, right? So I have a MacBook here. Well, it can run, I don't know, 100 Home Assistant instances easily. So I just, for development, you know, you just pin up Home Assistant in a development container. So it is isolated. But, you know, that's just the way I do development. And it doesn't really matter. I can do that on my computer here. We get up spaces where it's a virtual machine that runs Home Assistant, which works just as fine, because it's just a low power machine just runs Home Assistant fine, because that's what we're optimizing. So, yeah. And then, do I have the most automated house? Nah, I have, like, you know, there's a sump pump here that I have, some water leak detectors. I have smart locks. I love smart locks because it will automatically lock the basement door and will automatically unlock it in the morning. So I don't act fiddle because, you know, I'm also lazy.
Where we all is in that way.
Of course. I built, we have this thing, we call it the most private voice assistant in the world, where we allow you to connect an old landline phone to a Home Assistant. And then when you pick up the phone, it will use our speech to text and text to speech to have a conversation with you. So it will actually, you will talk to a Home Assistant, and my kids love this. So I have it like tied to a large language model that says, you're Super Mario. And then they're like talking to Mario, but they're asking questions. And I've set up, when you create a script in Home Assistant, you can make it accessible to the AI. And so I wrote a script that said, tell everyone, and you pass it a message as a parameter, and then it will use text-to-speech to play that in the living room. So my kids can be on the phone and be like, oh, tell everyone, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the AI and the message to be text-to-speech over my speakers, blah, blah, blah. And then they have so much fun.
Amazing. I'm actually writing this down so I can follow up on this later, because that sounds fun. Yeah. I am curious, and I don't know, maybe you can't even talk about it. Do you ever dip your toes into the other ecosystems, like the Google Home, or market research?
No, but I mean, I have Apple Home and Google Home set up. I think actually I have a Samsung Frame TV, so there is some smart. I need to open the Smart Things app to change the photos, but the last three times I tried it didn't work. So. I guess it's, I have it set up. I have, you know, most of my, I think I have those also connected to Google Home just to see how the multi-fabric works, where like, hey, I have two Meta controllers controlling that one device. So I definitely keep an eye on them, but it's interesting. I see some things that they've been copying from us, like Apple nowadays tells you how green the electricity from the grid is that you're getting. Google is playing with a YAML edit pro users, which is like YAML, like that's our bread and butter. Yeah. And so it's really cool to see. I mean, we're also learning from them and seeing the kind of approaches they use. And so I'm definitely always interested in seeing what them, but I think the true experimentation and pushing further what a smart home can do and can be, that happens in our space, because people have access to the data. Like before a team at Google or Apple gets signed off to build a feature, you know, that's like a year of research. And then there's just so many people that are constantly sharing their projects. Hey, look what I'm doing here. You know, today is like September 11th. There was a big, on Hacker News, was an article going around people using NFC cards for their kids to control Home Assistant. I mean, that's a project I have at home as well. I love it. And my kids love it. They're like, tap to play a single song, and then like every 3 minutes playing a new song. And it's so cool to give people control, kids control of the physical world, because a lot of the devices are not made for them, right? A voice assistant generally isn't trained on kids' voices, or remotes are too difficult, etc. So giving something that they can use, that they understand, and they feel in control, gives them like makes them very happy. So,
yeah. I know that feeling. I have a 4-year-old, and when she asks, "Are we have like a Google Home speaker to play music?" When she asks it to play music, my wife or I will always pull our phone up on the side and actually like start it, so she thinks she's the one who started it because it did not understand her at all.
Yeah.
But I do love the idea. I love thinking about that. There are probably a handful or a not insignificant amount of people working for companies like Google and Apple who run Home Assistant.
Oh, for sure. I meet them. Yeah, no, those exist. It's because if you work on a smart home company, you love smart home. You want to get the most out of your smart home, then you end up with Home Assistant. Now, because Home Assistant is open, like you can feed everything in Home Assistant with the HomeKit bridge, and it's available inside your Apple Home. You can feed everything into Google Home. You can feed everything to Amazon. So you or maybe your partner or anyone likes that ecosystem more, they can actually coexist very well. And that's the power of Home Assistant, right? Is it like your data? You want to give everything and put everything in Apple? Do it. Be our guest.
Yeah, I actually rely on the Google integration myself. And I was like, do I want to talk about that? Because it feels a little embarrassing because I have everything through Home Assistant for myself, but there are some things... my wife is so conditioned to like Google Home on her phone that there are some things I put there because instinctively that's where she goes when she needs something.
We cannot break that flow, right? Like I think we can have all our ideals and perfect everything, but in the end, the people living in our homes, the people living their lives, that is the actual goal, right? Those people should be able to do their things, and you know, it's my partner the same. If she has to think too long about something with technology, she'll just, right? Like it has to be right there when she needs it, where she expects it. And if that is not Home Assistant, but that's maybe the taskbar from Apple, like you drag down the control center, there controls, then that's going to be it, right?
Yep. Well, Palace, I think that's probably a good note to end on. Thank you so much for the time today. I feel like I could probably record another at least hour talking about some of these things with you, but I don't want to keep this too long. So thanks again for joining. I'm going to include as many links in the show notes as possible.
Awesome.
You are doing a ton of great things through Home Assistant, through Nabucasa, through the Open Home Foundation. Just want to make sure that people are aware of the work you're doing. Anything you want to leave everyone with today before we hop off?
I think my main thing is just don't take things for granted, right? Like the fact that Home Assistant exists, it's because we have this amazing community, because there's people supporting developers, but also people helping others get set up. And, you know, the way the self-hosted world, right? You're writing up to people know the latest stuff. Like this is all effort done by people that are... most of them are not paid for it, right? Like, yes, there are top of the iceberg. Like there's a... paid to work on this full time, but there are so many more people and we always need more help, because the alternative is that you give full control to Google, full control to Apple, and they have investors, they have shareholders, and they have not your best interest at heart. That's always second priority.
All right, well, thanks again, and thanks everyone for listening.